and shifting constantly, and they crisscross the entire seafloor wherever plates intersect. When the plates move, in the event of an underground earthquake, a huge amount of dense water is pushed upwards. Water is not easily compressible and cannot absorb the energy produced by these movements, so it lets it out in waves we call tsunami. Tsunami are very different from regular wind-blown waves. Instead of rotating and having a trough behind them, which pulls them back into the water, they are just walls of solid water with wavelengths of miles instead of feet. Tsunamis can have wavelengths of up to 520 miles, meaning that the ocean will be disturbed up to a depth of 260 miles. The thing is that the ocean's average depth is only 2.3 miles, and it only goes down to 11 miles at its deepest trenches, so the energy pulse moves the entire column of water it passes through. These wavelengths are so long that they always drag along the sea bottom. Tsunami also move at really high speeds. A 1 meter high tsunami, when it's in the deep ocean, can go up to 500 miles per hour. When it moves into shallower water, it slows down in the front and water begins to build up behind it. The visible edge of a tsunami wave is not like a regular wave, though. It will continue to flow up over the land for several minutes. Their waves can come up to an hour apart, and it is impossible to know which of these will be the highest. Another dangerous aspect of tsunami does not necessarily make their final approach to land as a series of giant breaking waves. They may appear to be more like a very rapidly rising tide. This may be accompanied by underwater turbulence sucking people under and tossing heavy objects around. Right as it makes landfall, the beaches are drained of water as the wave takes up a huge volume of it. Entire beaches have been stripped away by tsunami. Tsunami have been occurring on Earth for quite some time. Scientists have found traces of an asteroid collision event they say would have created a giant tsunami that swept around the Earth several times, pushing water up and over the entire Earth except for the tallest of mountains 3.5 billion years ago. The coastlines of the continents were changed drastically, and while there wasn't the sophisticated forms of life that there are on Earth today, it did kill almost all of the single cellular life that existed on Earth at the time. Thanks a lot, guys.
Aruba, Jamaica, ooh, I wanna take ya. Bermuda, Bahama, come on, pretty mama. Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go? Jamaica, off the Florida Keys. There's a place called Kokomo. That's where you wanna go to get away from it all.
Now that you know a little about the conditions for creating tsunami and where they occur, we're going to go a little more in depth and talk about how they can be predicted, measured, and what their effects are. While the technology for predicting earthquakes is currently limited, there are several ways to predict a tsunami. Up until 2004, seismologists used land-based stations to predict tsunamis. They would look at the quake's magnitude and location and try to predict how big the tsunami is and its projected path and speed. This method was extremely unreliable because sometimes earthquakes don't make tsunamis at all. Plus, the scientists were forced to make a decision about sending out a tsunami warning within a very short period of time, approximately 10 minutes. The lack of reliability with this system was noticed in 2004, and with lives and billions of dollars of property at stake, the federal government decided to invest vast amounts of money towards improving the system. This promoted the creation of ocean wave sensors. Ocean wave sensors are a way for a seismologist to record any increases in wave height after an ocean earthquake. A dramatic change in wave height means the earthquake triggered a tsunami. These sensors come in two forms. The first is a buoy that floats on top of the water and can record the height of the waves because of its movement up and down. The other way of prediction is by using a pressure sensor that sits on the bottom of the ocean. It records the downward pressure the water exerts above the downward pressure the water above the sensor exerts. When a larger than average column of water flows over it, the sensor notices and sends out a signal. Through the combination of all these methods, a scientist can predict the height of a tsunami and its wavelength. Knowing these factors helps determine its speed, path, and direction. Scientists look at topographical maps set... There we are. Scientists look at topographical maps, satellite images, tsunamis in the past, and use mathematical models to predict the tsunami's path, its speed, and power. The scientists will then put out a warning to the area's projected impact. If the tsunami has been detected, but scientists are still tracking it because they're unsure if it will cause damage, they'll issue a watch. If scientists believe damage will be minimal, then an advisory will be issued. This system of prediction has proved itself to be very useful, although it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, it's a step up from the old way of prediction. Switching to tsunami sensors was a smart choice, although the system does have its flaws. Tsunamis are extremely hard to predict, requiring multifaceted mathematical equations. These equations are used to figure out where waves will converge or move apart, get bigger or smaller, and how the ocean depth and shoreline plays a role in the speed and direction of a tsunami. The sensors themselves definitely help with these predictions. Each sensor costs about $400,000 just to purchase, plus maintenance costs. Since these sensors are so expensive, passing vessels often steal them or take the solar panels that supply their power. While all this technology to help predict the path, speed, and direction of tsunamis, you'd think that there would be a lot of ways to prevent tsunamis and their effects. But the truth is, a tsunami and its effects cannot be prevented. Let's think about the effects of tsunamis for 1 second. For one, it's a giant wall of water with an elevated sea level behind it, so there's no way it can be stopped. Second, its force sweeps away anything in its path, including buildings, trees, debris, and yes, even people. Once the water recedes, residents must deal with the higher risk of disease due to standing in contaminated water. Another effect of tsunamis, which has more to do with the earthquakes that cause them, is the fact that if it's large enough, it can speed up the rotation of the earth, therefore making the days slightly shorter. Out of all of these effects, there are only really two that can be prevented. The first effect that can be prevented is buildings being swept away. If buildings were built on stilts, then the water could rush under them. If for some reason they couldn't be built on stilts, then they could have open first floor so the water could rush through the building without putting too much pressure on the foundation. This will prevent more buildings from collapsing or washing away, creating less debris. The second effect that can be prevented is humans being swept away. If people received adequate warnings, they could run to higher ground. In addition, if they had a raft they could float on, their chances of being crushed by debris in the water is greatly reduced. So if you're ever in a tsunami-prone area, take note of where the higher ground is and keep an evacuation plan in case of an emergency. Hopefully, this gave you a better understanding of how tsunamis are predicted and how you can keep yourself safe. Coming up next is a short segment on the history of tsunamis, so stay tuned.
And the way the sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that blows her perfume through the air. Thank you.
here we are, guys, back with the history of tsunamis. Newly discovered tsunami deposits suggest that the Japanese coastline was hammered by a series of massive waves thousands of years ago. The finding adds to growing evidence that the region is regularly pounded by killer waves and could help in planning for future inundations. The northern Japanese islands of Hokkaido is nestled up against the Kudal-Kinshupka Trench, a place where the Pacific tectonic plates drives deep beneath the Eurasian plate and is home to a terrible earthquakes in excess of magnitude of 8.0. Now, scientists Wesley Nutter and a team of researchers say more than five waves, each at least 33 feet high, battered the coastline before the dawn of civilization on the island. In recorded history, tsunamis have hit the Hokkaido coast over and over again, Wesley Nutter of Earlham College in Indiana said, but something of that size has never been recorded here. Nutter and a team of researchers dug a deep trench going down into the ground to discover the history of these past waves. Team member Kazumi Harikawa of the Hideki University had first noticed a series of sand deposits years ago there in unusual, unexpected places. Tracing the sand deposits away from the coast, the team found they extended up to more than a mile inland and then get thinner further from the sea. In theory, huge storm surges could have deposited the sand, but a tempest with a 13-foot surge raked the region several years ago and left no sign of its passing in the marsh, which is protected by 33-foot-high cliffs. Nutter believes the deposits have tsunami origins, and they must have been big. In 2003, a magnitude 8.3 earthquake in the Kuril Trench generated a 13-foot-high, not nearly enough to reach the marsh. The deposits also seem to repeat every 500 years or so, suggesting that Kuril is capable of regularly ripping off huge earthquakes that could have devastating results. The Japanese government has already recalculated the tsunami hazard based on the team's initial results. In the case of an extraordinary earthquake, the resulting tsunami could destroy 5,600 homes and kill 850 people, even though the country has an advanced tsunami warning system in place. Next up will be preparations for tsunamis.
Can prevent crime. Pour some for your neighbors and local police officer, then talk about potential problems you see on your street. And go to ncpc.org for more tips. The public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Justice, Crime Prevention Coalition of America, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council. So now that you know how a tsunami happens and some of the scary events that have happened in the past, you should know what you can do to protect yourself from one. Tsunami can be incredibly devastating to landscapes and people if they are not prepared. There are a few ways to minimize the damages from a tsunami, but the most important way is to remain educated and aware. A 10-year-old girl was able to save hundreds of people on a beach in Phuket, Thailand, because she recognized the impending disaster and was able to warn the community. If everyone were this aware, there would not be so many deaths from tsunami each year. The first warning sign of a tsunami is a large earthquake, volcanic eruption, or landslide, so always listen for coastal disaster warnings and reports. If any of these occur, do not stay near the shore. It may take hours for the tsunami to reach you, but an earthquake can trigger dangerous waves that travel thousands of miles across the ocean. The first noticeable sign of a tsunami is a quick drop in water levels, usually revealing the ocean floor. If the ocean seems to be receding unusually fast, move to high ground immediately. You probably have a few minutes before the tsunami hits the beach. When the long and rapid waves rush the shore, you will be able to hear a loud roaring sound like a plane or a freight train, and the ocean will churn and gurgle. If you live on the coast and recognize any of these warning signs, move to higher ground immediately. When a tsunami warning is issued, it is best to go up a tall hill or mountain. But if this option is not possible, go to the top of a tall and sturdy building. Or, if all else fails, climb a mature and strong tree. If worse comes to worse and you cannot escape the waves, find something to float on, like a large piece of wood. Stay away from rivers and streams, since waves often travel up these water bodies, inundating the areas around them. So what should you do if you're already on the water? If you are on a boat in a harbor when the tsunami warning is issued, go out to sea, and fast. If you are on the open ocean away from the coast, do not return to shore. Out at sea is one of the safest places to be. After the tsunami passes, stay inland or out at sea, and do not return to the beach until officials have given the all clear. Tsunami often come in a series of powerful waves over an extended period of time, sometimes lasting up to several hours. Once the tsunami is coming, the best thing to do is remain calm, move upward and inland, and stay up to date on disaster reports. After a tsunami, be sure to check for injuries, go to a prearranged family meeting spot to ensure that no one was hurt or killed, and check your home for damages, but be very careful when entering buildings that have been seriously damaged and appear unstable. If you live in a coastal region prone to tsunami, there are some preparations that you can and should take to minimize the potential damages. On a personal level, have an evacuation route ready for you and your family, and know it well. Work with your community to prepare and develop good lines of communication. Monitor the ocean. Stay up to date on disaster reports. Learn CPR and first aid. Have an emergency stock of food, water, and other necessary supplies, and secure your home using boards, tightening fastenings, replacing old wood, etc. On a larger and more long-term scale, coastal communities should prepare for the possibility of a tsunami using intelligent construction. Some cities have installed large concrete seawalls to dissipate much of the energy from fast and powerful tsunami. These will not stop the flooding, but it will slow down the waves, reducing much of the impact on buildings and people. All construction in coastal regions should be reinforced with sturdy waterproof foundations using materials like concrete. Be precautionary. Don't build at sea level in areas that are prone to tsunami. To reduce water damage and flooding, buildings can be raised off the ground, with very strong concrete pillars, of course. Foundations should be left open so water can pass right through instead of building up and gaining potential energy. Many hotels in Hawaii have left the first and sometimes second floors completely open so that water can simply wash through without knocking down the building. One of the most effective ways to minimize the damages of a tsunami is to plant a coastal forest that will absorb the impact and slow down the waves. These forests should be about 100 to 200 meters thick, and the trees should be planted close together. These forests are only effective if the trees are mature, since young trees will lose branches and add to the debris in the waves. The best trees to use are mangroves, which grow in salt water and effectively slow down or stop the tsunami waves from continuing to inland communities. However, any forest of native trees with many branches throughout the entire height of the trunk would be effective at minimizing the damages of a tsunami. These forests also improve air quality, absorb carbon dioxide, and increase tourism. So why not plant one now to protect your community from dangerous tsunami in the future? Tsunami are scary, powerful, and nearly impossible to avoid, which is why it is so crucial to be prepared. If all coastal communities took these precautions, they could avoid many of the devastating effects of tsunami. So now you know what you should do in case the big one strikes.
Slight vibrations of an earthquake hundreds of miles away and to give warning of a possible tsunami. Well, for animals, this is possible. Animals have a greater sensitivity for ground vibrations and better hearing than humans. Eyewitnesses from the tsunami that hit Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and India in December of 2004 claimed that animals such as elephants, dogs, flamingos in the nearby zoos exhibited signs of distress before the tsunami hit. According to eyewitnesses, elephants screamed and ran for higher ground. Dogs refused to go outdoors. Flamingos abandoned their low-lying breeding grounds, and the zoo animals rushed into their shelters. Such behaviors are not normal for these animals. Further evidence to support these claims was found when Ravi Correa, the president of Sri Lanka Wildlife Conservation Society, traveled to Patanangala Beach inside Yala National Park to assess the damages. This beach is one of the worst-hit areas and is home to a variety of animals, including elephants, leopards, and 130 species of birds. Much to his surprise, all he found were two dead buffalo that had drowned. Eyewitnesses told Correa that they had observed elephants running away from the beach about an hour before the tsunami hit. Moreover, the other reports along India's Cuddalore coast where thousands of people had perished said that buffaloes, goats, and dogs were all unharmed. Unfortunately, due to some of the odd behavior exhibited by the animals, such as bats frantically flying overhead and dogs refusing to go outside, some residents stayed inside their homes and didn't get swept away, which saved their lives. The research being done on acoustic and seismic communication in animals indicates that elephants can easily pick up vibrations generated by massive earthquakes that sometimes trigger tsunamis. Unfortunately, research has not completely proven that animals have a sixth sense, and there are still many skeptics. Nonetheless, the stories and eyewitness accounts of the animal behavior before the tsunami are fascinating and provide some compelling evidence to support the idea. Maybe in future years, more solid evidence will arise to support the claims. Coming up next is a segment on deadliest tsunamis. Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Surfing now, everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me. Now, surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Hello! As you've learned so far, tsunami are one of the deadliest and most frequent of natural disasters. When they form, the massive speeds and buildup of wave can bring complete destruction to entire cities and coastlines. To fully comprehend their destructive tendencies, let's take a quick gander back to some of the most famous examples of the world's deadliest mega tsunami. One of the deadliest tsunami I'm sure you've all read about formed in the Indian Ocean back in 2004 and brought crazy destruction upon Thailand, Sri Lanka, Indonesia, India, as well as 9 other countries. So how did this colossal wave form? The tsunami began with an enormous earthquake, the second largest in the past 100 years, in fact. 19 miles below the Indian Ocean floor in west of Indonesia, the oceanic plate split and ruptured northward for 740 miles, lasting 7 minutes. The collapsing buildings crushed thousands of people on nearby islands, but this was before the tsunami hit. It gets much, much worse. The subduction zone earthquake caused the ocean waters to rise tens of feet, and the rapid movements of the plates caused the waters to surge outward hundreds of miles an hour in every direction. The tsunami hit Sri Lanka and India in the west and Indonesia and Thailand in the east. In some places, the waves were as high as 50 feet. Indonesia had the highest death toll of over 198,000. And overall, the tsunami affected 13 countries and the estimated total death, the death total was 245,000. So it can be difficult to believe that so much damage can result from just a wave. But a tsunami, like the one in the Indian Ocean, can travel upwards of 500 miles an hour. At that speed, it's more like being slammed into a brick wall than a wall of water. In Sri Lanka, the tsunami struck a train carrying 1,000 passengers, and the wave was so strong that it completely ripped the train off its tracks, rolled it into the marsh, and tore and twisted its stainless steel wheels. The tsunami that hit Alaska in 1946 is another example of its incredible power and force. A subduction zone earthquake off the Aleutian Islands sent a wave roaring across the ocean. At that time, 5 poor unsuspecting workers in the Scotch Gap Lighthouse were shaken awake. 20 minutes later, a tsunami over 100 feet high completely swept away the reinforced steel lighthouse that was already 46 feet above water level, and all 5 men were killed instantly. Another devastating tsunami occurred 50 years ago in Chile. A magnitude 9.5 earthquake, the highest ever recorded, caused the tide to rise 15 feet above sea level. About 1 hour after the first seism, a 26-foot wave traveling 125 miles an hour crashed into the Chilean coast, crushing boats and coastal buildings. But that was not the end of it. The next wave reached 35 feet, and though it traveled at half the speed of the previous wave, it killed over 1,000 people. One of the highest recorded tsunami waves resulted from the eruption of Krakatoa back in 1883. This massive eruption caused giant volcanic masses to smash into the sea, charging the water with energy that formed a mega tsunami headed straight towards Indonesia. In some of the areas where the waves were channeled into smaller spaces, the tsunami reached over 135 feet. At this height, the waves ran across entire coastal hills and destroyed 165 villages, killing over 36,000 people. This number would not be exceeded until the next mega tsunami struck Indonesia over 100 years later, back in 2004. So as you can see from these accounts, tsunami are capable of colossal destruction, and in areas with constant tectonic activities can be quite common. Pretty terrifying. And if you think these waves are big, wait till you hear what Margo has to say about mega tsunami, the highest and fastest waves that are scientifically possible.
Thank you.
tsunamis are no joke. This wave can be up to 50 stories tall and can be caused by landslides falling into the ocean. When this happens, it has been proven to be catastrophic throughout history. The biggest tsunami on record happened in Alaska's Lituya Bay on July 9, 1958. There were a few boats in the wave's path before it hit the empty coastline. Only one out of the three boats survived. There was a large rumbling over the mountains over there, and then they saw what seemed to be an atomic explosion. Then, over the horizon, they saw a wall of water. When the wave hit them, the boat shot upward. The wave carried them over the land and above the trees, then back into the sea. This was not the first mega tsunami to hit the coast. In the 1950s, two scientists were looking for oil in Lituya Bay, and they discovered the mature forest didn't go all the way to the coastline, and there was a band of immature forest below it. They studied the rings of what happened to the trees on the line where they form from young to old. The trees show that it grew well until a point where it had been struck by a huge force, and growth had slowed after that. In 1958, they learned that it was a mega tsunami. These types of tsunami are much larger than normal tsunami because the amount of energy generated when a landslide shoots into the ocean can be so much greater than the amount of energy produced when a normal earthquake tsunami occurs. Normal tsunami are about 30 meters high. Well, a landslide tsunami can be as big as 150 meters high. One of the most potentially catastrophic tsunami events that could happen on Earth is a mega tsunami. A possible target for a mega tsunami is the east coast of the United States of America. Yeah, that's us. One place that is very, very prone to landslides is volcanic islands. Volcanic islands are very unstable because they plume up and tower on top of themselves, closer and closer to the ocean. Eventually, large sections of these islands fall off into the sea, creating mega tsunami. This has happened many times throughout history. The next volcanic island that is likely to fall into the sea is La Palma on the Canary Islands. The island has two volcanoes, one still active and one dead volcano. The active volcano erupted in 1949 at the same time as an earthquake that split the volcano in half. The west side of the volcano, which is also most of the west side of the island, could fall towards the sea. That is half a trillion tons of rock. The next time the volcano erupts, it could fall off into the sea, sending a mega tsunami towards the east coast of the United States of America. The tsunami would cross the ocean in 8 hours and expand in length so that it would completely destroy cities from Boston to Miami. The wave would be traveling at 720 miles per hour. The wave height would be close to 650 meters high, and it would be 30 kilometers long. Don't get too afraid. It could take decades before the volcano erupts again, and it could also take many more eruptions.
Ooh.
a dad, you'll probably spend years teaching your son how to hit a baseball, how to throw a tight spiral and hit the receiver, how to hit the strike zone. The question is this: how much time will you spend teaching your son what not to hit? Teach your son early and often that violence against women is wrong. For tips on what to say, visit endabuse.org. Brought to you by the Family Violence Prevention Fund, the Waite Institute for Violence Prevention, and the Ad Council, and this station.
Talk to you about a recent tsunami that hit just weeks ago on October 25th, and it was a magnitude 7.7 earthquake that triggered a tsunami off the coast of Pagai, Indonesia, and the Mentawai Islands in West Sumatra, Indonesia. The most recent projections indicate over 400 deaths. And thanks to poor weather conditions, the lack of proper roads, and dispersed villages, the rescue efforts are limited the first few weeks. The worst hit areas were only reachable by helicopter or boats due to the vast stretches of land between villages and the unpaved roads. In addition, a shortage of aviation fuel and the lack of working phone lines hindered the distribution of aid even more. 5 minutes after the earthquake and tsunami warnings were issued, the tsunami hit the beach. Officials claim that warning systems were vandalized and that was the reason for the lack of preparation. However, scientists claim that the warning system was not vandalized and the problem was communicating the warnings to the remote areas. Due to the poor conditions of the roads in Indonesia, the relief only reached 20 to 30% of the affected areas. The tsunami itself destroyed a majority of the houses in the small fishing villages of the islands. The initial destruction was catastrophic. 400 people died, and the delayed and limited relief efforts further exacerbated the situation. Most of the weight of this devastating event was placed upon local authorities. An official responsible for the warning said that the locals failed to pass on the alert, telling reporters, "We don't feel there was any mistake." So this is a pretty bad disaster, and it's really current, so if there's any way you can help, that would be appreciated. So I hope you all learned a lot about tsunami, and this is Red Alert, brought to you by the Masters of Disasters. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned next week.
If everybody had an ocean across the USA, then everybody be surfing like California. You'd see them wearing their baggies, Huarache sandals too. bushy, bushy blonde hair. Surfing USA. You'll catch him surfing at Dell.
Outside USA.
Ventura County line.
Inside USA.
Santa Cruz and Trail.
Inside USA.
Australia's narrow beach.
Inside USA.
Oh, okay, man. Everybody's gone surfing
USA.
We'll all be planning out a route we're gonna take real soon. We're waxing down our surfboard. We can't wait for June. We'll all be gone for the summer. We're on safari to stay. Tell the teacher we're surfing
USA.
Pacific Palisades,
inside, outside,
USA. San Onofre,
inside, USA.
Redondo Beach, LA,
inside, outside, USA.
All over La Jolla,
inside, outside, USA.
Hawaii, Miya Bay,
inside, outside.
Everybody's gone surfing
USA.
What I need without you.